Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Okay, so we're not done covering the Friday debates in the state of Montana. I have probably the longest and the biggest, and to be honest, what I want to do is point out that I was in such a hurry yesterday in my previous episode covering this, I didn't go through the obligatories at the very beginning. So forgive me. This show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org. And just so you understand, RepublicReview.org is a domain that we own and we will hand over to the states as they start pulling states together in exercising Republic Review. In other words, you can't create a multi-state website of Montana's government and Wyoming's government and all the other state governments. They can't merge their government pages. They're separate sovereign bodies. However, republicreview.org is it's going to be the platform for all of the states to be able to share how they're going to move forward in forcing the federal government into compliance to their compact. So I knew that we needed to have this platform, and what we hope to actually have on this, and I hope the states can easily do this. They can record the video and audio of these debates and discussions amongst each other, because if you read my second book, I actually talk about this. We want to be very transparent. We want the federal government to know we're coming after them, because what we want is we don't want resistance out of D.C. What we want is compliance. But we want D.C. to know that we have all the support of the Constitution, be it their oath of office, via the call of treason and the charges of treason to remove them, and also ultimately the use of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment to remove them from office permanently and to ban them for life. Because we are literally watching our public servants at the federal level and even in state levels doing everything they can to commit rebellion against the Constitution. I mean, just last week, and this is really about the convention, but I just want to point this out. Just last week, Biden has opened up the ability for more of an invasion to occur. He took an oath to the Constitution, and he's supposed to protect us from these invasions. This is an invasion of political combatants. They may not be military combatants, but it's an invasion. It's an invasion of our government, our process, and he is violating his oath of office. And as he goes, I'm just so frustrated. We must get these states together. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about a little dialogue that I've already had with a Montana state legislator and what and how to get states to come to the table. But what we want to do and what I need to still do is kind of get through these obligatories, because you are listening to the only show that provides the academic-based evidence of where we were, what happened, and where we're going, and the academic-based solutions to get us back onto the course of what the framers gave us within this instrument called the Constitution and getting the federal government back within those constraints. Just remember, we have a comment line. Anytime you have a question, any time of the day, just put this number in your contacts for Reclaiming the Republic, 425-270-5416. I'll say it again, 425-270-5416. Call. Leave your question, leave a comment, tell us what you think, tell us what your problems are, what you want to know, or what have you. You don't have to call us during this show, because some people only listen to the show via their phone, via call-in. Some people listen to the show via streaming, and it's hard to be able to use the phone you're streaming on or the device, because many people are using devices to stream nowadays in their cars or what have you. Fact of the matter is, we don't want you to interrupt the content of this show. We believe that the content is pretty critical. It would be hypocritical for me to basically say, hey, don't listen and just sit on a phone line. Even more importantly, keeping this thing at the 1 hour that we have, it's not necessarily convenient for anybody and everybody. But you can call a 24-hour line, a comment line, and that's pretty doggone convenient. So that's why we have 425-270-5416. That's our comment line. By all means, ring and burn up the bell on that baby. We're more than interested, because this is a listener base. This is a Republican form of government, and we all have a voice, and we all have our representatives. I am your representative in getting the federal government back into compliance of the Constitution. I'm actually addressing the problem. I'm not trying to get you involved and engaged in a process that has no hope whatsoever, none whatsoever, if solving the problem. This is what I was saying in my episode yesterday. What we are seeing are those champions for getting their ability to put a mark. You know, I've said this before about Mark Levin with his Liberty Amendments. I know people love the Liberty Amendments, but the Liberty Amendments do not solve the problems. As a matter of fact, they are a part of the problem. Mark Levin is just looking for an opportunity. You know, Madison was really clear. The federal government is not to be able to dictate or dicker with or play with domestic matters. Why would we want to give the federal government the ability to have controls? There are a lot of conversations that people need to open their minds up to say, you know what? We have all been programmed into this concept that the federal government does everything. No, states are supposed to do most everything in our lives. And the states need to be able to work together, and they need to be able to come up with the solutions instead of turning to the federal government and saying, how do we do this? So, you know, until we have these conversations, which is what I beg for in my books, we have to have these conversations like adults. Instead of just constantly coming to the conclusion that there's got to be a law, that the federal government ought to do this. No. Anyway, the other thing I want a little go back, because the last person that we had on the last episode, which was a John Birch, and he started off this scenario of high blood pressure and everything else. And I kind of started covering this, but I kind of digressed a little bit. So what he was basically talking about, what we should be asking, then begins, you know, this, if we're actually saying, what is the question we should be asking? What is it we should be doing? Well, okay, that actually begins the process of putting things on the table. And then this is where we can, you know, start examining, well, this is what Jefferson and Madison did. This is what Jefferson wrote about in 1783 in the Notes on the State of Virginia. So, here's my point. What this gentleman did was he posed this, well, you know, we should be having this open discussion. But then he goes into this, you know, attack mode. Well, this the convention is more of, it's being sold as a quick fix. And, you know, he doesn't believe in quick fixes. In other words, his position is not about having the conversation and putting everything to the side and saying, let's have this conversation. He actually basically becomes a part of the polarizing of this is bad and this is what we need to do. We need to do nothing. It's almost like they don't even acknowledge. No, I can't say that. They do acknowledge that all these things are problems, but they don't want to fix the problems. They believe that as long as they can feed you some more, come to their presentations and pay some money and buy their material. There are a lot of great people out there that are really, really smart and great educators, but they do not care about solving the problem. I know, and I'm not going to mention the person's name, but this person is highly regarded around the United States for being a constitutional expert and speaks all over the place. Now, this may be a person you know. And I actually had a personal conversation with this person and their spouse in the late evening in Idaho after they had done their presentation. The spouse was going, man, this Republic Review idea sounds like really a great idea. This is something we need to fix. This is something we need to look into. We, you know, based on what you're saying, because, you know, a 15, 30-minute conversation talking about it, you really don't know the facts until you start reading into it. Okay, I get that. Instantly. Not the spouse, But the speaker and educator quickly said, nope, I don't see this. I can't get involved in that. Why? Why was they so quickly dismissive when the spouse was going, and the spouse almost had a very active role with, you know, this person? And here's the thing. It comes down to their market space. They make money off of your fear of the problem. And what are we going to do? We got to educate you. Keep buying our education. Our next book is going to give you everything you want to know about this problem. Oh, well, isn't that great? You're going to know everything. Pretty soon, everybody will know everything about all of the problems and still will not have a clue how to fix it. And where the real burden lies, who's really at fault? This is why my first book, Whose Constitution Is It Anyway, points to the fact that, you know, even though it's the Lord's Constitution, because he endowed it with us, it is the state's legislatures. It is their responsibility. As Madison even pointed out in the resolutions, they're the ones that are duty bound to interpose this and arrest this evil. Come on. Everybody knows that they are the only parties. It is the states, not we the people. As nice as it may seem, when the style committee changed it to we the people, before it said we the people of the state of and listed all of the states. Well, that seemed to be kind of too long of an introduction, you know, and if they would have continued to include all the states, it would read from the very beginning to the very end of the 50th state and then get into the rest of the preamble. Well, so the style committee said, well, let's just make it we the people. Patrick Henry pointed out in the ratification debates that we the people basically creates the paradigm that this is a democracy. And this is why Madison's response to Patrick Henry was very clear. Who are the parties to it? We the people? No. We the people of the 13 sovereign states. In other words, he pointed to the fact that the states were the sovereigns in this particular case. And how are the states sovereign over the Constitution? Well, who has the amendment authority? 38 today, or 3/4 of the states, have to agree. In other words, it doesn't allow the population of one state to have a greater control. And this is one of the things that they want in the Convention of States, is to give apportionment back to the states so that they have a greater voice on what's going on with the Constitution. Do you really think that that's a good idea? No. One state, one sovereign, one vote. And that was the beauty, because Madison talked clearly, and people lose this. This is why we have to have these conversations, but people lose this concept of the fact that when we're looking at a republic, one state gets one voice, they get one vote. And so it protects the small states like Delaware at the time, or today it's Wyoming or Montana, but it protects the states from tyranny and from the mob rule of a democracy. So with that, let me just go ahead and I'm going to move forward with this next interview, or I should say this next testimony that was submitted during the Montana debate. So this is the next testimony and the final one, and then we'll get into some closure here for you. So here you go. This well, Mr. Brown. Say
page one, historical precedent, and on the other side, legal precedent, because this is what I wish to point to and discuss today. I want to begin by asking a simple question. Is Montana prepared to give up federal funding in order to balance the budget? Because there's been a lot of talk about balancing the budget today. There's been a lot of talk also about how much of Montana's budget comes from federal funding. That's something we need to consider, whether or not we're ready to do that as a state of Montana. And today I take issue with many of the claims that have been made by the proponents, but I'm going to confine my testimony to just one statement made by Mark Meckler. Now, as a side note, I've repeatedly challenged him to public debate, and he has publicly refused on every occasion. So if he's still in the room, I'm issuing that challenge again. He claimed in his testimony that the runaway convention is a myth that was invented in the 1970s. It's not only not a myth, it was not invented in the 1970s. The idea of a runaway convention began in 1787, in the convention of 1787, where our U.S. Constitution was first formed. The question in the 1787 convention repeatedly came up. Do we as delegates have the authority in our delegate commissions from the states to propose a completely new form of government and a new constitution? This question came up repeatedly during the convention and again in the ratification conventions thereafter. On my handout, historical precedent, I have three columns. The first column is the first type of answer. There was really three groups. The first one is those who rose to say, we do not have the authority in our state commissions to be proposing a new constitution, and therefore we should not proceed. I'll point to just one of them here. William Patterson, the middle one on that page. We ought to keep within the limits of our state commissions, or we should be charged by our constituents with usurpation. Let us return to our states and obtain larger powers, not assume them of ourselves. So his assertion was, we don't have the authority and we should not proceed. The other side of the argument, illustrated in the middle column, could be summed up as this. Yes, you're right, we probably don't have the authority, but because of the urgent needs of our nation, we need to proceed anyway. The easiest one to point to on that one, Alexander Hamilton. The state sent us here to provide for the exigencies, urgent needs, of the Union, to rely on and propose any plan not adequate to these exigencies, merely because it was not clearly within our powers, would be to sacrifice the means to the end. Notice that what he's saying is, number one, yeah, it's not clearly in our powers, but we need to do it anyway. Now, the third category is those who rose to say, wait a minute, we do have the authority. Look at our delegate commissions. This is what Mark Meckler has repeatedly claimed, is that they did have the authority in their delegate commissions. So why did no delegate in 1787 rise and make such a claim? I put out the challenge for years now, and I challenge anyone in my voice right now. Find for me the delegate in 1787 who made that claim, who rose and said, we have the authority in our delegate commissions. Look to it. It's right here. If you cannot find that, then you have to admit that the convention of 1787 recognized that they were overstepping the authority of their delegate commissions, as all of the citations I just provided do. And that, you know, the only historical precedent we have for a national constitution amending convention is the 1787 convention. This is the only legal precedent we have. So again, I'm issuing a public challenge. Anyone, find for me the delegate in the 1787 convention who rose and said, we do have the authority to proceed, or you have to admit it was a runaway convention. The runaway convention is not a myth. And in fact, the legal precedent that was set by the 1787 convention has continually been upheld in numerous state constitutional conventions ever since. You turn to the second page of my handout. I cite numerous examples of state conventions who have declared there's no possibility of the state legislatures placing any limit on the authority of their convention. This is summed up at the top under Corpus Juris Secundum, where it says the members of a constitutional convention are the direct representatives of the people, and as such, they may exercise all sovereign powers that are vested in the people of the state. They derive their powers not from the legislature, but from the people, and hence their power may not in any respect be limited or constrained by the legislatures. You've been misled today. Many very good, well-meaning people supporting convention states have come up and told you you can limit the convention to just these three topics. Historical precedent, legal precedent clearly show that is not the case. Now, not too many years ago, the state of Nevada, their legislative assembly, having had applied for a convention under those promises, realizing that this does not bear out when they looked into the details of the history and legal precedent, they declared that they had been induced by fraud, that's their words, induced by fraud to call for a convention, that they've been misled by false information. I've now set the record straight for you. The historical and legal precedent of a convention is that your state legislatures have no authority to limit the scope and power of that convention. If today you choose to call for or apply for this convention, know full well that you're applying for a convention that is of unlimited authority. Now, one other thing I need to point to is what authority did the convention in 1787 decide they were acting under? They knew they didn't have the authority from the states. On page one, under historical precedent, I have a box insert where Madison declares what power they were appealing to. They appealed to the power of the people themselves, not the states. And they did so by changing the ratification method. At that time, just like today, the Constitution defined that the state legislatures were to ratify whatever came out of that convention's proposals. They changed that. They took it away from the states entirely, turned the ratification process over to the people themselves. Now, this idea has already been proposed by a number of convention proponents today, that we should change the ratification process to the people themselves, simple majority vote. Now, lastly, in Madison's day, just 1 year after they had written the Constitution, there was already talk about, hey, let's use this Article 5 convention. By 2/3 of the states, we can change this new Constitution. They wanted the Bill of Rights added by an Article 5 convention. And Madison eventually supported the movement to add a Bill of Rights, but he wrote several letters warning against the convention method, one of which was November 2nd, 1788, written to George Turberville, in which he said he would tremble for the result of a convention that was called by the, quote, previous application of 2/3 of the state legislatures, referring to an Article 5 convention. Even if it was for the avowed and sole purpose of merely revising the Constitution. And what was his main concern? He said he would tremble in the present temper of America. There was already so much political discord among the people of America at that time, in 1788, that he was very concerned about the results that would come out of another convention. We too would be wise to consider if the present temper of America today is one to cause concern if a convention is called. Don't blame the Constitution for our problems. We need to sustain and defend the Constitution. And if you're interested, the founders wrote far more in the Federalist Papers about how to defend the Constitution and how to push back against federal government overreach. Never once did they suggest we should change the Constitution when they violate the Constitution. But at least, probably a dozen of the Federalist Papers, they say exactly what to do. And I could go into that if there's some interest in that. Thank you.
Okay, so we're
Eldon Stahl.
So we're back onto this whole dialogue now. Sorry about that little cut in. I didn't believe I had that. So, anyway, let me move on. One of the things I just want to point out is that what Mr. Brown focused on was really more procedural precedents and argument for and against and who has control. He pointed to this concept that the federal government, or I should say the Constitutional Convention, was a runaway convention. And as a matter of fact, this came up in the Federalist Papers, and I'm surprised he doesn't talk about this, because Madison, in Federalist Paper number 40, defends exactly what they did. He pointed to the fact of what they were commissioned to do and what they had to do. And so, and even pointed to the exigencies. He's absolutely correct that Madison was not a fan of the Article 5 Convention anymore. This is why the Article 5 Convention was taken out, and it was actually submitted by Madison in the Virginia Plan. And he gets into a lot of this stuff. But the bottom line is, Madison, after this convention and after understanding what he had to go through, he also points out, and I think it's in Federalist Paper number 50, he starts warning people, you need to look at the motives behind people who are calling for a convention, because the convention for amending the Constitution is a dangerous one. As Mr. Brown ended, he says that there are ways within the Federalist Papers, but those are crap. They do not get into the details of what really needs to happen regarding how to defend the Constitution and how to protect the states from federal tyranny. if you read the ratification debates, it's a little more enlightening than the federal. And as a matter of fact, the Federalist Papers are insightful, but they're not legally binding like the ratification. Why is it that nobody uses the ratification debates? Well, because they don't want to end the discussion. If there's some ambiguity, if the Federalist Papers only being insightful and not legally binding, then it allows debate and argument. But when you read the ratification debates, the argument is moot. This is what and how the Constitution was defined, period. And it takes away judges and politicians and lawyers' ability to argue. Anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to this show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so let me actually kind of look at, and I don't want to say I'm going to pick apart Mr. Brown's comments, but I want to highlight some things. The first thing that he talked about was, is Montana ready to give up its federal funding? Montana needs to look at its budget and determine what Montana... In other words, this little line right there sent a message to every legislator, hey, are you guys ready to start giving up your funding? The fact is, and what he didn't say, is when a state claims its sovereignty, it is no longer bound. First off, it's not going to be able to receive the funding that is unconstitutional. So in other words, you know, is Mr. Brown defending this concept of the federal government unconstitutionally giving away money? Sounds like it. It sounds like he's using that as a fear factor for state legislators to go, wow, we really need that money. Do they? I'm here to tell you that Montana doesn't need a penny from the federal government. I'm here to tell you that Montana is so rich in resources that, just remember, that when you say you have no authority in our state, we are sovereigns, you can't control our timber production, you cannot control our mineral production, or anything that we are doing. Your environmental regulations, your educational regulations, every regulation you have strapped us with is unconstitutional. So when you give up the funding, all of those strings get cut too. So the question maybe should have been, is Monty, but he didn't ask this, but maybe this is what it should have been, is Montana ready and willing and able to deal with its freedom and tapping its resources that Montana abundantly has? Montana's got an incredible amount of resources. Now, they may have a lapse, but I'm here to tell you that they probably wouldn't have that big of a lapse if they restructured their government and downsized their government to the constitutional powers delegated. And what do I mean by that? When I look at every state constitution, almost every state states that the U.S. Constitution is the supreme law of the land. And it is that line that the federal government uses when they come down and say, hey, we've created an environmental protection agency, and therefore we mandate constitutionally, which is all unconstitutional, by the way, but they try to use this constitutional label to say, you now must create an environmental protection agency to interface with us. So as Montana cuts these ties, they need to look at their own government and say, you know what, we got a lot of people employed here that we do not need or should have employed. Now, if Montana wants to have, which is a good idea, to have their own environmental protection agency, and they want to strangle themselves without making the best decisions for Montana. Now, just remember, results take time to measure, right? So when you're mining for something, you don't realize that maybe until empirical data proves, oh, there happens to be this carcinogen. But we can't live in fear either. When we started creating asbestos, asbestos was an awesome insulator. It was a great solution for the time. But again, results take time to measure. And voila, we realized that asbestos had a carcinogen that gave us mesothelioma. And therefore, you know, the Dow Corporation, and they didn't know when they first created this that this is going to cause this form of cancer. And so, did they hide or withhold information to say what we're doing is bad? It's kind of like the tobacco companies. When the tobacco companies started, they didn't know that, you know, cancer and all these other things were going to be an outcome. Now, when they started doing studies and they started suppressing that information, they became bad players. But the fact of the matter is that anybody that thinks you're breathing in smoke into your body, which is, you walk into a smoky room, you first start coughing. Common sense tells you that smoke isn't good for the lungs. Whether that be marijuana smoke, whether that be campfire smoke, it doesn't matter. Smoke's not good for the lungs. It happens to be chemicals and carcinogens. Anyway. Fact of the matter is when we start pointing to this, it all of a sudden creates a trigger in every single legislator's mind that, oh, we have to give up our budget. Oh, no. Then how are we going to balance our budget? How are we going to be able to maintain all this government that we have to? You don't have to maintain it. That's the great thing. And what he should have said was, now is the time for Montana to really start considering and putting everything on the table to realize what it should be doing and what it shouldn't be doing. Now is time to really look at how you're functioning as a government and how you as a people are functioning under this rule of tyranny. It's got to end. And everybody would probably, reasonable people equally informed seldom disagree. The problem is that middle part. We're not equally informed. And in many cases, our information is being led by pernicious people with designs to try to get very select outcomes, outcomes that typically favor them. Okay, so that kind of points to this this dialogue on runaway conventions, because I've already kind of went through the dragged the dead horse. Forgive me if you love horses, but you know the adage, you know, how long are we going to drag a dead horse through the mud or what have you. So I was just using a metaphor there. So forgive me if you happen to love horses. Anyway, the whole point here is that there was a lot of focus on this thing called the runaway convention, and the facts are that what they were commissioned to do was to address the exigencies of the day. And I would ask anybody to read what Madison stated in Federalist Paper number 39. All right, actually, no, it's 40. And it starts right off with the powers of the convention ought in strictness to be determined by an inspection of the commissions given to the members by their respective constituents, as all of these, however, had reference either to the recommendation to the meeting at Annapolis in September 86 and or to from Congress in February 87. The act from Annapolis recommends that it appoint commissioners to take into consideration the situation. He goes through here, and then he starts talking about what they did and why they acted the way they did, because they were trying to act within their parameters. From these two acts, this is like five paragraphs down. The first, that the object of the convention was to establish in the states a firm national government. Second, that this government was to be as such as would be adequate to the exigencies of government, and the preservation of the Union. Third, that these purposes were to be affected by alterations and provisions in the Articles of Confederation as it expressed in the Act of Congress, or by such further provisions as should appear necessary, as it stands in the Recommendatory Act from Annapolis of the 4th. And the fourth, that the alterations and provisions were to be reported to Congress and to the states in order to be agreed to by the former and confirmed by the latter. Now, so to be honest, what he's basically saying is they had this convention. They sent this constitution where? To the states and said, the states, now you have to act? No. This really points to Congress having controlled Continental Congress. This went to Congress to be recommended to be forwarded to the states for and to be followed. What Congress could have done, Continental Congress could have done, was they could have, you know, tore it up and said, now you got to fix these things and you've got to do these things before we will forward this. Why did they send it to Continental Congress? Because that's where the charter, the commission, I mean, even though the states created these commissions, it was sanctioned by Congress to do. Therefore, that's why they sent it to Congress. But see, these are little nuances that really don't matter, because what they were dealing with was a problematic constitution. And the constitution itself was going to cause the demise of the republic. Is that the situation today? Absolutely not. The problem is the federal government, not the constitution. This is a testament that what the good Lord inspired and provided us in this divine document called the U.S. Constitution is not only more than adequate, it is sufficient for us today to be able to deal with all of these runaways, all of these different problems that we're dealing with. We have the power at the state level to deal with every single one of these breaches, and we can. But we're not. But why aren't we? Well, that actually goes to this whole concept of keeping people ill-informed. If you don't teach people what Madison and Jefferson did when the Constitution was actually violated and show them the details and some analysis so that they can agree with your analysis or refute it. Nobody's ever refuted my analysis. Nobody has ever said, well, you know, Jefferson didn't lament when he actually used the words, we can only lament. And Madison, when he says that the parties are the superior tribunal, refute that. Tell me that Madison didn't say that. But they can't. What they say is that, oh, well, you know, if we fix the problem, because this is what they're really not saying. If we fix the problem, how are we going to maintain our relevance? Folks, I want you to understand who I am. I am the big unemployer of government and those who make money off government being our problem. We want to unemploy conservative entertainers. We want to unemploy the progressive media. We want to unemploy all of these factions that are out creating and making fools of themselves by actually creating these conflicts that unfortunately the average person can't even get through the nuances of what they're doing. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so let's get into some other facts, because it is being argued one way or the other, and I don't think that they're really shining the light appropriately. The fact that the convention has the authority to do this, whether Congress has the authority to do this, this is all a distraction. And the matter of fact is, and this is why I asked those very specific questions in, you know, my arguments against the Convention of States. Here are the questions that nobody has been asking. This is what has to be asked before you even start entertaining debates on the convention. What is the cost? Who is going to be responsible for paying? The states had to pay for the first convention. If Congress calls for this because the states requested it, does this mean the federal government's going to be obligated? The second thing is, what is the course and process? They had a set amount of time. You had this much time. They had to convene by the 17th, and they did. They were able to walk in and create a constitution in just a matter of, you know, a few months. And what Meckler is proposing will take years. In other words, if you really look at how they want to approach this, they want to create a perpetual convention. They think that they can throw out a few ideas, but they really are trying to look at creating a fourth branch of government, which is not a cure. We don't need to be patching something that is not causing our problems. The Articles of Confederation had to be called. It was necessary for the states to convene a convention to save the Union, not to save the Articles of Confederation. They knew that the Articles of Confederation were the problem. Is the Constitution the problem? No. Then there is it. End of story. There is no more discussion or debate on the Convention of States. The Constitution is not the problem, so we don't need to look at convening the states and amending or rewriting it. End of story. Once you get to this point to say, is the Constitution the problem? No, the federal government's the problem. Then clearly, there is no mechanism within the convention and amending the Constitution that will fix the federal government complying. As I pointed out, the 11th Amendment was even, and many of the amendments are being walked on by the states and by the federal government. The 14th Amendment is being walked on by the states today by shutting down your ability to go to religious worship, by shutting down your ability to commit commerce. The states do not have that power. The 14th Amendment restricted them from making or creating laws that abridge the individual privileges and immunities guaranteed by the Constitution. In other words, we're living under tyranny at so many different levels, our heads are spinning, folks. The cost of the venue, the cost of the convention is just ridiculous to even try to fathom and try to think of. And since time is money, and since we only have so much time left to get the federal government into compliance, that's what we must focus on. The fact is this as well, because this was thrown out there as well. Whether the convention and or Congress has the authority to force a state to submit to their findings. No. States are still sovereign, and I do not see the petitioning and commissioning delegates as submitting the states to agree and must follow. You know, the states were not up, you know, not Delaware, Rhode Island didn't even have a convention because they weren't obligated based on the Continental Congress to say, you must do this. They're not, they're sovereigns, and they chose to ignore it until they realized that they were the odd man out. And the only reason they came in is because they knew over time they would lose the battle because they were surrounded by a nation and Rhode Island is a speck. Anyway, you know, when we get into and have that, we are wasting more and more time talking about this. And the whole intent of these last two, the previous and this episode, so it's a total of three episodes committed to talking about the Article 5 convention and the process and so forth, only proves that it is a waste of time because it does not address the problems. So how do we unite? So I had a conversation with a good senator from Montana. We kind of sent some texts back and forth. And one of the things that Montana is really upset about, or it seems like this is something they want to bring people to the table on, and, you know, having a republic review or convening the states and working together on the pipeline? I forget I will pull it up while I'm thinking about it. She actually mentioned it. And so right here, what is it? The Keystone Pipeline. Forgive me. I'm terrible with names. Remembering all of this stuff, it gets difficult. Anyway, so she was thinking maybe we could unite on the Keystone Pipeline. And in all honesty, to bring people to the table, there has to be something in it because everybody's a WIFM. You got to look at states as WIFMs as well. What's in it for me? And so they want to be able to, you know, gain something by attending this altar. Well, you know, how many of the states out there look at Obamacare as an intrusion and taking away their ability to have a free healthcare system? Well, there were 29 states. If we had all 29 states come to the table just over Obamacare alone, we would be able to open up the doors to everything the federal government is doing and saying we must end all of this. Now, there may be a few states that may be kind of in a bad situation because they are dependent on federal funding, but most all of the Western states that have abundant land resources and more resources than I even care to go into because I don't want it to spill into this conversation. I'm going to tell you that almost every Western state would be able to thrive and open up their economies if they weren't living under this veil of constrictions by the federal government, both in energy and all of these economic ways that the federal government is constraining the economy of every state. We do not have a free economy. We are living in a mercantile economy where the government tells you what you can and can't do. We do not have a free market. We have a mercantile system, which is one of the reasons why we fought Britain, which led us to this whole point of the state, the Stamp Acts and all of these taxes that Britain was putting upon us. Well, the federal government is doing far worse. I mean, the taxes, those stamp acts and so forth, those were small percentages of taxes. And our forefathers said, hey, we're not going to put up with this. But today we're living in the box and putting up with the tyranny from the federal government of much greater than a tenth of a percent. To a tune of 50% or more of our earnings are going to government. And then there are those who are getting richer and richer because government is protecting them. Don't tell me that government is out here doing noble things and what they believe is best. They're doing what they believe is best to put money into their accounts and into those accounts who are helping them. This is the government that has been bought and paid for, and we can stop it. So how do we get these states to unite? Well, all you have to do is find out what's federal tyranny are you living under? Maybe in some states it might be this invasion. In some states it might be how they've been impacted by federal regulations. Every state is being impacted by tyranny. All you have to do is just point out all of these problems that you're feeling right now, and you get every state has a hot button issue or several. Let's call it a hot button list. You know, here's our top 10 complaints about the federal government. Well, the fact is, and this is the fact, that all 10 of those complaints that they have are about unconstitutional government. Hey, let's get together and we'll all work together in getting rid of all of the complaints and free ourselves once and for all. Because I say this because what the states would then finally be doing is something that Madison thought of but didn't know how to do. They didn't have the technology to be able to see what Congress, they couldn't even fathom the ability of real-time reading while these people were discussing and debating at the state level to be able to overwatch. The fact is, do we need a Senate and do we need the Senate in D.C.? Or should the Senate be operating out of the state legislatures and then actually be more accountable to both the state legislators and the people? We have the technology. We do not need the Senate in Washington, D.C. anymore. Do we need the people and their representatives in Washington, D.C. with today's technology? Absolutely not. We're proving this. We're proving that we, with the infrastructure and technology today, we can function to where representatives of the people are available to the people on a full-time basis. Now, there are national security concerns. We can put SCIFs, sensitive compartmented information facilities, within each of these capitals so that they can actually have, because as a contractor, we had all sorts of highly sensitive, top secret meetings over a VTC with our customer, an intelligence agency, and we're able to just do this while they were in D.C. and we were in San Diego. Well, every capital can do this, and every capital can actually have these virtual meetings and virtual discussions. Why are we limited in thinking that we have to put butts in D.C. when we really don't need to? There are ways, and I believe that everybody has skin in this game and everybody has more than enough motivation. We can unite. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobius Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.